Good morning. It's good to see everyone this morning. We're glad that you're here. We are going to continue our study in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 this morning. This section of 1 Corinthians, I'll tell you, it's not the most comfortable section to speak on, but it's something that is necessary, certainly, as we go throughout this study. And we want to look at just a few verses this morning, verses 18 through 20. Verses 18 through 20, where Paul is still talking about sexual sin, and he's leading up to talking about marriage and principles for marriage, and certainly this lays groundwork for how a marriage can be happy, or it can be destroyed if these principles are not followed. But let's go ahead and read the verses that we'll be talking about this morning, starting in verse 18. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, for whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you are bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. And so here, the sexual immorality is addressed again. And this is not only just an issue in marriage, but every single person who engages in sexual immorality brings these sins and problems into their life. And if they are eventually married, then they bring those problems into their marriage as well because of these things. So the instruction here is very clear, and that is to run or flee from sexual immorality. We need to run away from that, and we saw that in our study of Joseph, how he did that when Potiphar's wife was trying to tempt him. We need to run as far away from sexual immorality as we can, and any temptation or hint of temptation that would lead us into that direction, we need to avoid it. And that's something that people don't want to do, usually. They don't want to flee from sexual immorality. They want to play with fire and get as close to it as they can. And the verse that we read this morning in Proverbs talks about, can a man play with fire and not be burned? And certainly we know that to be true. And I want to emphasize in the introduction this morning that there are three places in our culture today where we need to be particularly careful about this. And that is at work, online, and in the church. First of all, we need to be careful in our work, and I think that goes without saying, but we're going to say it anyway, that people fall into temptation many times in the workplace. When my mom was working in Dothan, Alabama, when all of the kids were old enough to go to school, my mom worked part time at a doctor's office, Dr. Haley down in Dothan, and one of the responsibilities that she had was to go to the post office every day and pick up the mail and mail whatever needed to be done, mailed. And there was she went there at the same time every day, and she said there was this man that she would always see there, and he would, smile at her and say, "Are you having a nice day?" And they exchanged pleasantries. One day, he asked her if she was having a good day, and she said, "I am." And he said, "Well, I am because I had a good breakfast and I get to look at a beautiful woman." And it kind of struck her, that what he was saying, and she said, "Well, I hope you had both of those things at your dinner table this morning." And so she decided that she was not going to go back to the post office at that time because light bulb went off that every time she goes, he's there, and she's not always consistently there at the exact same time. So he was hanging around so he'd get to see her. So she decided that's not a situation that I'm comfortable in when this man is talking to me this way. And that may seem rather minor. You may think, well, that does not seem like a big deal, but it seemed like a big deal to her. I remember when I first started working at EBSCO Media, and this was back before Jarrell and I were, probably about a year before Jarrell and I were married. And there was, people there that we'd go out to lunch with. And it so happened that I would end up going out to lunch with this one person. She'd say, "Well, you want to go pick up someone?" I'd say, "Sure." And then somebody told me, "There's people talking about you two going to like. And I said, well, why? Because she's married and she likes you. I know that may be hard for you to believe, but she really did. And so, you know, there was something that I was not seeing about that situation. Just this past week, me and one of the salespeople from Konica Minolta went out to lunch at it's called the Tip Top Cafe or something. It's up there on South Shades Crest, and we're in Bluff Park. And I'd never been there before. And we were close by. I said, well, let's go get a burger there. And so we did. And Murray said to me, you see that man over there? That's the sales manager at such and such a printing company. And he said, that girl he's with is one of the customer service people. That's not his wife. And I was like, well, you know, they're just together. You know, they're just eating lunch. I was not thinking there was anything particularly scandalous about that. And Murray was insistent that that's not a good situation. And so, you know, we're kind of looking over there, and he's starting to caress her arm. And then we see them standing by the side of the mountain there and kiss as they leave. And so, you know, he was right. There was something going on there that shouldn't be. And where did that start? It started in the workplace. And time again, you see that kind of thing happen in the workplace because men and women spend time together, and they actually probably spend more time together in the workplace than the husband and wife spend together in the home when you think about the number of hours that is spent in the workplace. And maybe the relationship between the husband and wife isn't what it should be, or maybe the husband is mean to the wife, or the wife is mean to the husband. Or there's something amiss in the relationship, so that makes the man or the woman want some kind of companionship. And when somebody else is complimentary, oh, well, you look very beautiful today. Well, my husband hasn't said that lately. I sure do like that you're paying that kind of attention to me. And so you see those kind of things start happening in the workplace. You should not allow for those kind of things to happen. Maybe you shouldn't be going out to lunch one-on-one with the opposite gender. And the way that I handled that situation as goes, I just went out to lunch as a group. There wasn't a group going. I wasn't going to go out, you know, one-on-one with somebody like that, because not that there was anything going on in my mind, but the way that it looked and the fact that she was married, and it brought, you know, questions to other people's minds. So we need to be careful about those things. And certainly I don't need to tell you that happens, that there are things that start happening in the workplace and that marriages are broken up because of relationships that men and women start having because they are not being guarded about their relationship. Another risk to relationships is found online. And I'm not talking about the obvious problems of pornography, but you're probably very well aware that is a big problem. Certainly, we've had a lot of meeting announcements lately where that subject is being talked about. It's a big, big problem today, and it needs to be talked about. But what I'm talking about is the problem with social media. You witness many affairs and divorces happening because people have reconnected with old flames. I know a situation with somebody that I grew up with who, because she was online, she reconnected with her high school boyfriend, and then she ended up later divorcing her husband, and so she could get back with her high school boyfriend. In fact, several years ago, my old high school girlfriend contacted me on Facebook, and she, you know, went on to tell me, you know, asked me how I was doing this and that, and she said, well, I've just recently got a divorce. I thought, oh. Yeah, you know, well, that's why you are all of a sudden contacting me out of the blue. So what I did is I sent her pictures of my family, and so that ended that discussion right there. But you know, you see those kind of things happen. What starts out as an innocent conversation can develop into a breeding ground for an affair. And we need to put, if we are married, we need to put up some barriers. I know we like to converse with people, and we might like to monitor the status of our friends and see, you know, where they're going on vacation that we're not. But we need to avoid those kind of things that are going to be dangerous. These types of conversations that can grow into affairs need to be avoided. I've noticed that some spouses have a joint Facebook account. And why is that? Because they're so computer illiterate, they can't figure out how to set up another account. No, it's not. Well, it might be, but what it is that they want to see what each other is doing. That they don't have any kind of privacy from one another. And when we feel like our communication that we're having with other people needs to be private, that we have to hide it from our spouse, then that is a problem. If you would be concerned that your wife or your husband could see your browser history or that they could see the text that you're sending out on your phone, and they get a hold of your phone and the first thing you do is grab it away from them because you can't look at that. That's my personal business. Well, what kind of personal business do you have that your spouse cannot see? What kind of things do you have on your computer that you would not want your husband or wife to see? If you don't like the idea of sharing that kind of thing, then you're doing something wrong. You've got something to hide. So if you don't want your spouse to see what you're doing, then you need to think long and hard about that, that maybe you're sinning against him or her. And see, online, a lot of things can happen that are not good. Whether it's pornography, certainly that's not good, but when it comes to social media or the contact that you have with people, either through texting or email or through other types of social media, you need to be open or be willing to be open with your spouse about what it is that you are doing. The next place that we need to run away from sexual sin is in the church. Now, I know that might be kind of surprising that would be listed. So we need to think about that. Because you may be surprised us that you need to be careful in the church. Well, think about it. We are enjoined to be the family of God. And the danger is that we can sometimes let our guard down and think because we are Christians that we're safe from those kind of temptations. But have you ever known of Christians that are in the same congregation for a man and woman to end up having an affair or to commit sexual immorality with somebody that's within that congregation? We're probably all aware of that happening at some time or another in different places. I know that I certainly am aware of that. I know of preachers who have counseled women one-on-one because, you know, for whatever reason, the woman comes to him and needs counseling on something or has questions, or maybe it's even something as innocent as a Bible study, but they continue to have those discussions one-on-one in a closed room, and then things happen that shouldn't, and a marriage is broken up because they were both unwise to be in that situation with one another. One thing that my father always did is if he was having a class with a woman, he'd always have somebody else there with him. It was never a one-on-one thing. Because he did not want that to look bad. He didn't want to be accused of something later on, because sometimes people do accuse people of doing things that they didn't. Of course, there's always the possibility that you would be tempted to do something that is wrong. And if you have others there with you, either another woman or another man or somebody else there, so it's not one-on-one, you greatly reduce the possibility that something wrong is going to happen. But people are very unwise in the way that they choose to spend time with one another, with the opposite sex. And they may feel safe, well, it's another Christian. But that doesn't mean that there won't be temptations. It's very dangerous. And so, we need to be aware of that. Especially those that preach need to be aware of that if they're doing a lot of counseling. And I want you to think about it this way in regard to your marriage. Because sometimes when you get to talking about this kind of subject, people get upset. That I don't need these kind of boundaries. Because people should trust me. And we should trust one another to do the right thing. And you know, I understand that. People get upset that they don't think that they need these kinds of boundaries. But this is not about trust. It's about you wanting to show your spouse that everything that you do is above board and nothing is hidden. You want to protect your marriage from sin, or you should want to protect your marriage from sin. When we are arguing that we should be trusted, you know, we're kind of missing the point. We should know that Satan cannot be trusted, and he's ready and he's able to violently attack us with temptation in any of these situations where we feel like we should be trusted or that we are innocent. Marriage is something that needs to be transparent. If I don't want my wife to know where I'm going, then I'm doing something wrong. If she doesn't want me to know where she's going or where she, how she's spending her time, then there's something wrong. If I don't want her to look at my phone calls or look at my text messages, then why is that? It's not about trust. It's about your spouse having confidence in your love for them. So go back to the original point. Flee from sexual immorality. Are you going to do the things in your life that build up that trust in a relationship, that show your love for one another? Are you going to run away from any opportunity that could cause sin? So you want to protect your marriage, protect your spouse, and protect yourself. The rest of verse 18 continues to talk about the severity of sexual sins. There are a couple of different ways that you can read this, where Paul says, every sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. So you can kind of read that as a declaration from Paul. The other way that you can read that is what we talked about last week, is that there were these ideas that the Corinthians had that Paul is addressing, and the idea that, quote, every sin that a person commits is outside the body. I think what Paul is doing is he's correcting that notion. That that's not true. That every sin that a person commits is outside the body. That's not true, because the sexually immoral, they commit sin against their own body. And so the Corinthians, they don't need to discard sexual immorality like it's any other sin. Paul says it's a sin against your own body. It's a serious sin that impacts your own body. It destroys your life. The book of Proverbs is very explicit in the way that it talks about this type of sin. I want to read a couple of passages that are a little bit lengthy. Elijah already read one of them, so we won't reread that one. But I want to read two others for you. Proverbs chapter 5, starting in verse 1. And I want you to pay attention, obviously, to what this says, but I want you to also think about how the writer of the Proverbs speaks very specifically about the danger of this sin. And I think it shows that it's addressing this type of sin in a different way than it does, than the writer does other sins. You know, every sin is bad, of course, but this sexual sin is dangerous and destructive. He says, my son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and that your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others or your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and body are consumed. You say, how I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. You get the idea that this is being treated seriously? This is a severe warning, a very stern warning to stay away from the adulteress. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly he is led astray. So this is a very stern, precise warning against sexual immorality. And he says that what is done, the eyes of the Lord are going to see. You may sneak off up to Bluff Park, you know, and think that nobody sees you, but lo and behold, somebody did see you, and even God saw you if nobody else did. Do not go to the house of an adulteress. And it talks about the temptation and about how good that situation is going to see and how tempting it is. But in the end, it leads to destruction. Also in Proverbs chapter 6, that was read this morning, it talked about the same type of thing. To learn from your father's commandment, don't forsake your mother's teaching, and don't be drawn in to the adulteress. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 7, starting in verse 10. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10. And behold, the woman meets him dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home. Now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner, she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him. And with bold face she said to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I paid my vow. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has took a bag of money with him. At full moon he will come home. With much seductive speech she persuades him. With her smooth talk she compels him. All at once he follows her. As an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver, as a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. And now, O sons, listen to me and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. You can tell from reading this that sexual sin has been a problem for a long time. And the things that are done, the things that are said, the way that people try to tempt one another, oh, my husband's gone on a long journey. The writer of the Proverbs is very specific about the situation and wants to warn those that may fall into this trap, don't fall into the trap. It just is going to lead to destruction. You have one way to preserve your soul, and that is to flee from sexual immorality. Run from it. Run far away from it. When you see the temptation, run away from it. Put barriers up to keep the temptation from entering your life. And why? Paul goes on in verse 19, and he says, because your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Now, this is a verse that gets ripped out of its context quite a bit and applied to a lot of different things, but let's look at it in context here and examine what Paul is saying. And we need to understand something about the temple. But when Paul says this in the Scriptures, the temple was the place where God dwelt. And Solomon declared that God did not actually live in the temple because there's nothing physical or made that God can dwell in 1 Kings chapter 8. So we know that. God is higher than the heavens and the earth. He's more vast than all creation. In Acts chapter 7, Stephen made this point in his sermon. He said, "The Most High does not dwell in houses made by hand." So what we understand is God is not actually in the building itself as though God could be contained in something physical. But what this shows is that this is a picture of God and the relationship that He has with His people. And God has a relationship with us as His people. And we are in a covenant relation with God. We enjoy the blessings of God. We belong to God. And when God was dwelling in the temple, the place that was a place where people came to worship God. And so what Paul is saying here in 1 Corinthians 6:19 is that God is the Holy Spirit, not that He's literally living inside of you, and that's why you need to run from sexual sin. He's saying that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you. You are in a covenant relationship with God, is what he's saying. You are enjoying the blessings of God. You belong to God. And so if you have that relationship with God, how can you give your body over to sexual sin? The temple was the place to meet God and be in a relationship with Him. And you cannot use your body for sexual immorality and have the right relationship. It matches the teaching that we see back in verses 15 and 16. "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? As it is written, the two will become one flesh." And so this all ties in together. You are not to be joined with a harlot. You're to be joined with the Lord. And if you're going to join your body in sexual immorality, that's not consistent with your body being the temple of the Holy Spirit. Your body is not a temple of sexual immorality or sexual sins. Your body is for worshiping the Lord. Why? Because your body is not your own. And I know that flies in the face of what a lot of people say today. Because it's my body, and I'll do with my body what I want to. And you cannot create laws to tell me what I can do with my body. You can't tell me what to do. But God says I can. Because you are not your own. Verse 19, again. "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own." So you may believe what people say today, that your body is your own, but that flies in the face of what God said. God gave you your body. Your body belongs to God. God says it is not your body. It's God's body. Your body belongs to Him. It's to be used as the temple of the Lord for worshiping God and not worshiping sexual desire. And so you can read Proverbs and you can be warned about sexual sin. You can read what Paul says and be warned about the temptation that's out there, but what Paul comes to that should be the basis of everything is it's not yours. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do anything that you want just because it's your body. When you came to Christ, you put your body into the service of the Lord. You were purchased by God. God made your body and He bought your body. And your body should not be used for selfish, self-centered uses. Verse 20 tells us the purpose. He says, "For you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body." And so when you use your body in such a way that it becomes clear that God's not the most valuable thing in your life, and that you want to fulfill your every selfish desire, you know, that's not consistent with those who have given themselves over to a life of service to God. Think about how marriages would dramatically improve if we acted in such a way that glorified God in our body. If people would run away from sexual sin, if they would put up barriers and not put themselves in situations, whether it be at work or online or with people within the congregation or whatever it might be, don't put yourself in the situation. I mean, we're very protective sometimes of our children as they're growing up, and rightly so, that we don't want to put them in a situation where they're going to be tempted. We're careful about where they're going and who they're going to be with and how many people are going to be there. You know, back in the old days, you know, the drive-in movie was the thing that my grandparents wouldn't want my parents to be going to, because drive-in movies had a bad reputation. And rightly so. What should you do? Oh, well, let's go out on a date and let's just go sit in the dark in a parked car and talk. Are you fleeing sexual temptation? Are you fleeing sexual immorality when you decide to do that? And then you're so surprised when something happens that shouldn't have happened? Or you put yourself in that situation. When you flee sexual immorality, you're going to take steps to not put yourself in that situation, not going out with that person at lunch that you don't really have any business being alone with, or studying with a person of the opposite sex, one-on-one, in a closed room, and then wonder why. Well, I think I like her. I think I like him. Flee from sexual immorality. Put up barriers and boundaries to keep yourselves pure, whether you be single or whether you be married. It all applies to you. Have transparency in your marriage, because you want to show your love for your spouse and ultimately your love for God, of course. Put up walls to keep yourself from crossing into sexual immorality. This is not the easiest subject to speak on, but it's very, very important. And it's very, very much needed today. It was needed in Paul's day. You can see Paul spent a lot of time on it. It was needed in the day of the wise writer of the Proverbs. And I imagine it's going to be needed for a long time, as long as this earth shall be here. We need to pay attention to it. We need to make sure that we don't get mixed up in sexual immorality. And we can avoid it. God has given us the warnings. We just need to heed the warning and avoid it. So I hope these things will be useful to you, and that you will do what you can to apply these things in your lives and help others to do that as well. If we can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come as we stand together and sing.